Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. And in this daily editorial, Shad and I are chatting with Doc Jones, private investor focused in the resource space. Now, Doc, we've had you back on the show a number of times, and we talk about a wide range of resources and a wide range of companies that you are investing in. We have a couple themes that we're going to go down here. The first theme, focusing a lot on the precious metal stocks and the whole question around tax loss selling. I've heard some of the bulls say, look, tax loss selling has already happened. People were already taking their tax losses earlier this year, and that is what caused a lot of that weakness in the stocks compared to the underlying metals, precious metals prices. However, look, we don't know. We are entering the time right here in the next about month to month and a half where tax loss selling could pick up. And in all fairness, whether company or if some investors have taken their tax losses, that's good for them. But there are definitely still some investors sitting on losses because, look, these precious metal stocks have continued to drop. So, Doc Jones, where do you see this argument going here? Is tax loss selling over? Or is it just about to pick up?
Hi, Corey, Shad. Thanks for having me on again. I think it's going to pick up. I don't buy that. There are people that did tax loss sell. Those people are generally the more sophisticated investors that understand the dynamics of the market. So I really think we're going to see a lot more pressure on the precious metals. Like I myself did my tax loss selling earlier in the year to seeing the macro environment and my belief that we're not going to see a bull market in precious metals till after 2023.
There's a lot of companies that cashed up last year and did a bunch of drilling, put out great results, and their share prices are a lot lower now. So they have to raise capital soon. And that's indicative of a lot of companies out there. So you're going to see a lot of dilutions coming into the system. And that dilution is going to come at a costly effect to the capital structure because as opposed to last time where maybe they could raise without a warrant, now precious metals companies have to offer a warrant, a half warrant or a full warrant to bring investors into the story. And as well, you have to consider what's going on in the macro environment, that the input costs for producers are rising rapidly. You're going to see some producers, they're all in sustaining costs, their cash costs rising drastically. And some of the marginal producers that were eking out a decent profit now will be in the red. And across the sector, their cash flows are being compressed. Therefore, there isn't the need or the impetus to go out and acquire a junior, because they're going to be in self-preservation mode pretty soon for that reason.
So, Doc Jones, when you look into some of these stocks, look, you are right. The prices have continued to drift, and there are companies right now that are going to be needing to raise money, and that always puts them in a tough position. Is that what you're focused on? Or do you think that we could just see kind of a wave of selling even come into the even better resource stocks or precious metal stocks as well?
Possibly, but that's where I would suggest people make their list of their best ideas and go down the tick list. Like they're fully cashed up, that they have there's no reason really right now to go out and just buy a greenfields exploration company when you can buy ounces in the ground that are mineable at $10 an ounce in the ground, $12 an ounce in the ground, plus 50% of the market cap being cash, or you know, so I think the better companies, yeah, they'll be affected as well. But that's where you employ. When I was fully invested in precious metals last year, there's a strategy when we had a brief downturn before we rallied back up again. Is what you can do is say you've got 10 stocks in precious metals. You pick your five best, sell the other five, and just double down on the best ones that you know that are cashed up and whatnot, because they will, at the very least, hold their value and then appreciate more rapidly in an uptick, because you won't have the capital structure all blown out. But personally, I think people should just focus on your best ones, and I'm not really in a position where I'm adding any. I own two precious metals companies in my portfolio, both of which have over half their market cap in cash, one of which has over 1 million ounces, which equates to you're paying like $8 or $9 an ounce in the ground. I think it's going to be the least performing sector out of the metals will be gold and silver for the foreseeable future.
Well, Doc, that makes sense to take concentrated bets or make them more concentrated in the quality. When quality goes on sale, to your point, why take the risk on the riskier ones when you can just buy ones that have an underpinning of value? So let's move over from the beleaguered precious metal sector to some of the other commodities that you're looking at. I know you take kind of a bottom-up approach when you're evaluating companies, but you also had mentioned off mic the topic of resource scarcity. So I'd love you to unpack that for our audience and what you're looking for when you go into some of the other commodity sectors.
Yeah. Well, I think what people need to understand out there is that for decades, we've had a vast underspend of development capital to bring on new production in the future. And the things like a copper mine, a zinc mine, an oil or gas project that's going to move the needle as far as providing future supply that will mitigate a rapid price increase in the commodity, that money has not been spent. And those things, those are long lead projects and high capex. So you're talking about, you know, to open up a mine from discovery to first production is 10, 15 years. In the Gulf of Mexico, a major discovery, which is going to contribute 500,000 barrels a day of production, that's like a $5-6 billion 12-year cycle before they get their first dollar of cash flow. So that spending has not been going on. And now we have a supply shock where demand is rapidly outpacing the available supply. And the market is balancing using some supply and demand fundamentals. The price rises to knock people out of the market that will no longer pay. So what I'm investing in and what I'm looking for is high grade, high margin projects that are in a development stage or that close to that will be able to benefit in the next few years from coming on production or be a takeout target by a major. You know, it's commonly well known that one of my largest positions is Amerita Resources for that reason, because of the amount of high grade historical resources that they have compared to their market cap. As far as in oil and gas, I'm looking more at gas and oil because electric generation, base load power is natural. It's going to natural gas, and we're adding more and more natural gas fire electric generation plants globally as we phase out coal, and that the world is waking up to that wind and solar are intermittent. You know, they can't be relied upon for base load. And because of the war against fossil fuels in the United States, prohibiting and keeping the development of the Permian Basin and other shale plays like the Bakken from bringing more oil on production, the byproduct there was natural gas, which is no longer there. And you're seeing that in pricing. Like, we have natural gas now globally in some areas is above the price of oil. Like delivery to Europe and China is $180 a barrel equivalent, more than double the price of oil. Just a few years ago, it was reverse. It was like 30 to 1, 40 to 1 natural gas to oil. Now we have the reverse. And for the foreseeable future, I think it's going to compress to that historic level where it was close to 6, 5 to 1 pricing. So I think the age of cheap natural gas is over.
So, Doc Jones, does that mean that we need to find some of these higher margin assets? We need to look into different jurisdictions, what some might be considered sketchier jurisdictions, not tier one jurisdictions, because a lot of those resources, a lot of those high margin projects have already been found?
Yeah, in some ways, but I qualify that the U.S. used to be a tier one jurisdiction for oil and gas, which it no longer is because there's too much political risk. Canada, too, is wavering because they refuse to allow pipelines to we would much rather just in Canada, they would rather just sell the United States at a discount, buy oil on the East Coast from Saudi Arabia and from other OPEC countries instead of building a pipeline and bringing it from the mid country. So as far as tier one jurisdictions, it's hard to say. You know, I gravitate more, towards, like there's like in Colombia, there's NG Energy, which I'm an investor in, where it's they've never, the country itself is very stable. It's never had a problem as far as with the World Bank, never defaulted on their debt. They get premium pricing over NYMEX for their gas, as well as their net short gas in country. So you're guaranteed anything you produce automatically gets sold into the country. It's a real quandary when it comes to resources as far as oil and gas to find the right place to invest. I think if you stay outside of the United States, you'll do a lot better than if you stay in the United States with your oil and gas investments. So that's how I'm approaching it. Eventually, there's going to be a shift away from using fossil fuels for transportation, and eventually that will be phased out. But you're always going to have demand for oil. Like 70% of oil demand is outside of the transportation sector, and so that demand is fairly inelastic. As well as with natural gas for electric generation, I don't see how that's going to be replaced in the next 50 years. Plus, you also have a lot of demand for other sectors beyond just for electric generation with natural gas. It's a hard question to find. It takes a lot of work to find the right investments in oil and gas right now, because you want to make sure that you've hedged your downside political risk.
Well, Doc Jones, when you're looking at the oil and gas sector, there's a lot of areas to play. And like you're saying, the political risk is a huge part of it. But there's also been this underinvestment in exploration and development. And it looks like that will be curtailed in some of these larger, like you're saying, 12-year lead time projects, because they can see the writing on the wall. But are there any areas or jurisdictions where you are seeing not just the production upside, but the exploration and development upside? Is there any areas where you think the drilling the new oil fields or some of the front end work they're doing would give investors potentially outsized gains at this point in the cycle?
Yeah, well, in general, I think you're looking for massive discovery potential. Like there's Frontera in Colombia, which owns like 80% of, can't remember the name of the company, but I don't know either of them, but they're drilling in Guyana, which could be a hundreds of million barrel oil discovery offshore. As well, I'm particularly looking at projects onshore, because it's a shorter lead time to go from discovery to production, because you just have to lay the pipe and connect it to an infrastructure that already exists, much like NG Energy, because they're drilling Sino-9, which has the upside of about 300 million barrels equivalent of natural gas. And also has a historical drilling on the property, which where they produced 10 million MCF a day from a well that in the 80s that was looking for oil, but they hit natural gas. And at that time, natural gas prices were so low that they didn't bother pursuing it because they were looking for oil. But onshore, when you're onshore, it's the lead time for development and getting the first cash flow is a lot shorter than offshore. The advantage offshore is that you generally get larger fields, except when you find something really special onshore. There's Trinidad and Tobago, I can't remember the name of the country, last year they drilled onshore and they hit this big discovery, and their market cap tripled in a matter of months because of it. There are those things out there. You just have to look for them. But yeah, my money's on, as I said, I'm an investor in NG Energy, so I like that company particularly because the CEO is very competent and has built many large resource companies, and he also takes no salary, which I like. Like his compensation is directly tied to the performance of the share price. And the assets, if you model the cash flow, they're trading at like one-time cash flow of 2022. So they're going to go from producing nothing to producing 10,000 barrels a day. And, natural gas has great margins compared to oil, especially at these prices. You're looking at 70% margins, 80% margins, because also Colombia, you get premium pricing. They're paying about $7 an MCFE there in country.
So, Doc Jones, just as a general wrap here, I understand that you are very selective with your investments, but what have some of the changes been to your investments as we've moved through this year and now your strategy for holding either a select few stocks or a wider range of stocks at the end of the year? Summarize that for us quickly, please.
Yeah, I've pared down my portfolio. I've harvested some gains in other areas. Like beginning of the year, I was in iron ore, and that did extremely well, and some copper producers, which did extremely well. And so I've harvested them. I've pared down my portfolio actually only to 5 companies at this point. The majority of my capital is invested in companies that are a explorer developer, where they already have a huge resource, which on its own is worth more than the current value of the company, in my opinion, obviously. And they have the additional upside of multiple gains in market cap, multiple X's based on the exploration and the upside potential of the properties they have. All the companies have well cashed up. They don't have any debt, or whatever debt they have is extremely small, and the covenants is not going to be an issue. And and I'm holding U.S. cash. As far as I'm keeping about 10% of my portfolio liquid, looking for opportunities should the market deflate. Like earlier this month, you know, Amerita Resources went from basically 23 cents up to $2.16 over about an 8-month period. And then we got the summer doldrums, and then it sold off on low volume down to about $1.30 over about a 4-week period. During that time, I was happy that I had it cash, because I was continuing to average up in my cost basis, knowing that the underlying value of the assets is, in my opinion, many multiples of what it is now. And then they come out with even more great news, like the EM survey on the property, which you guys talked about recently when you had David Gower on the show. And it showed that the potential of just the IBW that they own could grow by 3-4x. So that's my strategy. I'm just really a bottoms up fundamental analysis guy. You know, we've talked about this before. I find a really great team, then with really great assets, and I continue to just invest and add to the position until I gain a large enough stake where I feel that it's going to be beneficial to me in the long run. Either the company will go into production, get re-rated to a EBITDA multiple, or get bought out by a major, you know, in all cases. Like, for instance, NG Energy, Canacor in Colombia is the largest natural gas producer there. They're running out of reserves. So any discovery in Colombia in general by any company will be on their radar for a buyout. So, you know, that's how I'm looking at it right now. And I hold, you know, 2 precious metals companies so that I do have exposure should I be wrong about my thesis about precious metals. But they, too, are extremely well cashed up. They won't be going to the market for at least 2 years. And in 2 years, I think the market will return to precious metals. So in the meantime, I'm just happy to let the resources grow. And then they will be re-rated at a later date. But again, the precious metals is such a small percentage of the whole portfolio. That the main part of the portfolio is base metals and oil and gas. So, and copper.
All right, Doc Jones, we're going to wrap it up there. I find it always interesting to hear what you're investing in and what some of the changes have been in your portfolio, because you don't carry a bias towards any resource. You're really looking a bottom-up approach, trying to find some fundamental value in these stocks and understanding that metals, no matter which one, don't go up all the time. So you do need to be nimble and move from sector to sector, especially if you are focused mostly in resources. Doc Jones, great chatting with you as always, buddy. Thanks for taking time on today. We'll chat again in another couple weeks. Have a great rest of your week.
Sounds great, Corey and Chad. And happy Thanksgiving.